by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
Upon the cage, every foul wicked spirit in the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, that door of a on The Ooze, spread out.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really happen to have a serial crime
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
All right, is that again? I'm echoing already.
All right.
So. Real quick, I guess, we're going to be talking about, we're continuing this series, this taking action idea, and we're going to continue discussing these different things we got going on as far as being prepared and getting ready for what may be a major shift in the way Western society operates. Not a collapse necessarily, although that is something that's on our mind, that is something that we imagine we're moving towards, whether it's an economic collapse, whether it's a natural disaster, whether it could just be as simple as a shift in the way things are operate here. The Republican-Democratic process, and I'm talking not about the two parties, I'm talking about the way that our government operates, the ideals of capitalism, those things that you have to question whether or not basically they've had their run and they're coming to a close. And what some folks don't realize, I think, when they listen to the show is that TC and I are often engaged in this kind of it's an ongoing conversation. This conversation has been in the development probably for I don't know 2 or 3 years. Since TC and I started talking about different ideas, and we used to do the Outbreak Edition as a way to kind of just kind of let our hair down, just kind of to take it easy and relax and take a break from all these different ideas and talk about other things that interested us, other things that we found interesting in pop culture or what have you. And lately, given our focus, especially with our shift in perspectives, if you will, through the work and what have you, where you basically try to turn down a lot of the noise on the frivolous side of things, we've just found these different topics, these different, kind of goofy things we used to talk about, less and less interesting, and feel more pressed, if you will. We feel there's a greater need to kind of discuss these bigger ideas, to kind of get this information out there, and to engage in a dialogue with other people. We want to hear from other folks about their ideas because we're trying to figure it out ourselves. This is a developmental process, and we're trying to get our own plan out together. So the number to call in if you want to join in the discussion this evening is 347-989-1371. And right before we came on the air, TC was discussing how his significant other, his girlfriend, is getting ready to go back to school and going to college, and she's trying to decide what field to go into, what degree she wants to pursue. And part of her thinking is, we're looking at this situation down the road where even if the society continues as it is, we want some separation, that she wants some separation between herself and the system, and she's wondering what skill sets, what degree fields she should go into to kind of make sure that she can both make sure that she has the skills that she thinks she might need to be prepared for these kinds of situations, whether it's, whether it's actually in a collapse of society, a shift in the way things are ran, or just, putting some distance between themselves and the system as it is. So, and TC, I'm going to let you, I think we should, we should talk about that tonight. So what were the options again? What was she kind of thinking about?
Environmental studies was one of the ones that she had in mind. Veterinarian studies, and also the biochemistry or lab work dealing with blood and chemicals and stuff like that.
So like a lab technician.
Yeah, well, like a lab technician, but her goal at this point is she's going to go to school for a couple of years to at least get to that point. And then she wants to continue into into whatever field she's done. So she would go to school for a few years, work for a couple of years, go to school again for a few years, this time with a little better focus of what direction she's going in, you know, and work towards specializing in something. Maybe ultimately she'd be the, you know, the lab technician that discovers that HIV actually cures cancer. You know, that discovery was not made by some physician that examined a patient. It was made by somebody who has familiarity with, you know, things on a, what I would call a microbial level.
Right on. And before we started getting into it, it was your opinion, and this is a sound opinion in my mind. Now, the degree field she should pursue should be the one that is least likely to be available through other resources. Like some of the information you're talking about, you could go on the internet and find the basic, you know, the stuff that, you know, she would need down the road. She could pick up from books or what have you. Whereas some of the other fields you're talking about, she would actually need that specific training, and she could only get that training through college. My advice was that she should pursue a field that is as broad as possible, allowing her both to be prepared for whatever eventuality, you know, comes down the road, but also should that eventuality not arise, that she's able to maximize, you know, get the most out of that education and provide for you, you know, you guys, provide for herself and what have you through the system. So we have a couple of different, we're not opposed to one another. This isn't a disagreement, but it's different viewpoints. So again, if you folks want to call in 347-989-1371, what's her opinion? What's her thinking on the subject?
For her, she seems to believe that the environmental studies would be the best avenue, or at least that's what she's inclined to think at this point. She's It makes not a shit's bit of difference if you don't know how to purify your water, whether somebody can actually treat livestock or treat humans for illness. If you can't purify the water, everybody's going to be ill anyways. So that was her thinking there.
Right, and that makes sense. And my thing would be, you know, whatever it is she's going to pursue, it should be the thing that she's most passionate about. It's the thing that she feels is most important. So ultimately, it's, you know, it's her answer. But yeah, I mean, that makes sense. That if you're not able to take care of the basics, if you're not able to, you know, do that purification, if you're not able to handle all of that, well, then, you know, all the other stuff might as well be thrown out the window. So I can definitely see that point there. And I want to get into that also. I actually have web pages pulled up here that talk about water storage and water purification. So that's something that we can get into later on down the road. Is she concerned, and going back to school, is she concerned that looking at things as far as the future is concerned, is she worried that she might be wasting her time in college, that she might not have the opportunity to complete her degree, or does she think that the boat's going to stay afloat long enough for her to actually not only complete her degree, but actually get into the field that she's interested in?
Honestly, I don't believe that particular aspect has really crossed our mind at this point. What we've noticed is that there is, you know, there was zero job created, I think, this last month. And that hasn't happened in umpteen whatever years. The field of work is closing now. At this point in time, the most sense is, you know, then to go back to school and receive training, because while you're doing that, if your situation is correct, you can actually receive financial assistance, not just on the level of paying for your school, but on the level of receiving money while you're going through it. So it's a paycheck and you're learning at the same time.
Right on. And that totally makes sense. So yeah, I mean, it does make, if you have the option to go to school and it's not only is it not going to cost you anything, but that you're actually going to receive something for doing it, well, then absolutely, then you know, school's the way to go. My thing would be whatever field she feels has the most opportunity, whatever she's most passionate about, that's where she should direct her energies. I wasted a GI Bill pursuing an art degree. So, you know, Got that art degree, and I'm qualified to pour coffee at a Starbucks. So she's definitely got her head on her shoulders as far as that's concerned, at least beyond what I was thinking when I was looking at a degree.
Right on, man. I mean, the one thing that's definitely impressive here is the fact that not only is she passionate about all three of these fields, and it seems like pretty much on an equal level, but everything that she's taken in preparation, it seems to indicate that she'll excel in these three fields.
Right on. So I didn't expect this to be a decision that that we were going to solve on the ooze tonight. But yeah, I think it's a good way. It's a good introduction to kind of talk about the things that, again, we're continuing this conversation about preparedness. And we're talking about this. If you check out eminentmind.info, and I'll type the link in here in just a minute, but if you check out eminentmind.info, what we're having going on there is a discussion about ideology, mindset, in regards to some separation, some degrees of separation from this system that we see ourselves involved in. Even if the system doesn't collapse, even if nothing changes and it keeps on going the way it's going, a healthy degree of separation, we seem to think, is a good idea. It's something that people should strive to cultivate. It used to be common sense that you wanted some separation, some distinction between yourself and your neighbors, yourself and your government, yourself and the system that was around you. Our country was built on this idea of, you being able to have a plot of land that at least you'd be able to sustain your own family, and at least you'd be able to take care of yourself that way. Even if you weren't able to engage in the larger society. Now, engagement in that larger society is almost mandatory, but you have to be involved in that. That's the only way you're going to be able to sustain yourself, and that's not the only way that's available to you, as we're discovering. It's just what we're taught to believe. We're taught that there's only one option. There's only the system to turn to, and we're finding that's not the case. So developing that degree of separation, whether we're looking at a social collapse, an economic collapse, a change in the style of government, or just the thing becoming, continue becoming more bloated, more confused, and more ponderous, where, that you don't want to go down with the ship, basically. You want to make sure that you've got your own lifeboat set up, and that's where we're kind of going with these shows.
Right on, man. I mean, even if you took a little more of an extremist attitude and just said, hey, as it stands right now, today, we have less freedom than we had 50 years ago. And in that short span of time for things to have tightened up as much as it is, that should be an alarming thing for people. It should show that participation within this system, and forgive me for it should show that participation in this system not only is not beneficial for you, but it's actually detrimental to you, that you are, in fact, the person clicking the padlock closed on that fucking slave collar.
Right, and we've encouraged it as a society. This is something that we've been taught was the way to go. I heard a gentleman speaking earlier today, and I forget what exactly I was listening to or watching, and I don't know the guy's name, but he said something. It was something that I thought was a familiar phrase. He wasn't the first person to say this, but that our society, Western culture, especially here in the United States, we are the best entertained and least informed culture on the planet. We're more distracted. We're more involved in the little petty, frivolous whatever's going on than we are informed as to, the things that are necessary for us, things that should concern us about our survival, about our future, and things of that nature. And I would contend that this is not something that happened accidentally, that this is something that has been encouraged. This is something that has been planned. The idea that we should be, that the people of the United States should be distracted. The people of the United States should be have their awareness, have their perspective, have their focus, split up and scattered to keep us, to keep us malleable, to keep us manageable, to keep us from actually, dealing with some of these things on our own. Because as a nation, if enough people were to gather together and go, we're not dealing with the energy crisis the way you're dealing with it anymore. If we want to have wind farms and everything else, we're going to go ahead and just build the damn things ourselves. And I'm not saying that I agree with wind farms or what have you. I'm just saying that's an example. If you want to have, you know, we're going to have a nuclear reactor, and we're just going to build the damn thing or whatever. Well, whatever you're going to do, you know, go back to the woods, whatever it is. But we're just not going to engage in these governments, the government systems anymore. If enough people to rise up and do that, you know, that would happen. It wouldn't be a matter of the government stepping in and saying, no, you can't do it. They wouldn't be able to do anything about it. But by keeping us distracted, by keeping us, you know, focused on other things, you know, American Idol or whatever, then, you know, we're not engaged in the big issues. We're not engaged in the things that should really matter to us. And this is something that Gurdjieff has talked about. You know, we're both students of the Fourth Way. We take it very seriously. It's something that we try to apply in our own lives. And if you look at eminentmind.info, you'll see that we're actually taking the concepts expressed by Gurdjieff and applying them in an even larger manner. This kind of sly man mentality is something we're very focused on. So again, when we're talking about preparedness, we're not talking about going to one extreme where, you know, it's, you know, the survivalist mentality, where you actually have to hope for the end of all things to actually see some success, to see some fruition out of what you're doing. But we're also not talking about, you know, supporting and propping up this failing system. It is in decline. We are looking at an inevitable collapse. And it just makes good sense to start taking steps to prepare yourself for that situation. And I think that's kind of what we wanted to start really talking about here this evening.
Right on, man, right on. What blows me away is this is such a mountainous idea, a mountainous discussion that no matter which side of the mountain you decide to truck up first, it's difficult to determine, you know, what takes priority. And that's kind of the one thing that the conversation of me and Nicole were having just prior to popping onto the show here. You know, to me, how do you really judge what the percentage is of priority when you have it yourself existed in that kind of an environment? You know, you can speculate, okay, the water needs to be clean, but, you know, let's say we have the ability for the water to be clean and everybody's sick with fucking malaria. You know, you know what I'm saying? It's a vicious circle. So what priorities, you know, how do you decide the priorities of what skill sets that you're going to need to have and to what degree, given a fucking zombie Holocaust? I mean, let's just separate the fact that we really are in a real-life red alert situation and go back to fantasy land where everybody's used to being anyways. You know, if tomorrow you wake up and some weird mutated zombie virus is spread across the nation and it's you and a dozen others, what skills are going to be most important for you to have had?
Well, I think we should start, as far as our prioritizing is concerned, by taking a page out of the Fourth Way. Part of it has to do with a serious self-assessment, because we all have different degrees of preparedness. We all come to this question with different priorities already established. So a self-assessment needs to be involved, and you need to look at first just what you've got to do for yourself. The Fourth Way is a very selfish mentality. It's a very selfish ideology where it's focused on the self, where you can't be overly concerned about the people around you and the things going on around you. You have to be concerned about your own needs and what you have going on. So first things first, are you prepared to sustain yourself and your family on your own for an extended period of time? And what I would recommend folks doing is check out the American Red Cross website. They have a disaster supplies kit page. And let's see here. I'm going to go ahead and link to that here. They have a preparedness page, basically, which you go to just www.redcross.org, and you can check that out. Just making sure that you have these basic essentials. And these are things that, again, we're talking about the difference of, you know, we have less freedoms now than we had 50 years ago. Well, 50 years ago, the stuff that we have to be told to do by folks like the American Red Cross, well, this is just common sense stuff. These are things that, you know, everybody had this kind of thing going on, this kind of preparedness already established. Some of the things we're talking about are, you know, making sure that you have enough food, enough water. People tend to forget that you know, it's water that's going to kill you. You might have plenty of food. Enough, you can go days with a minimal amount of food, but it's the water that you can. If you don't have water for a week, you're pretty much dead. You're pretty much going to be without. And right now, water is for most households in the United States, it's abundant. You've got more water than you know what to do with. You have water on tap. One of the things that I'm reading that they suggest doing is that, you know, the water that you get out of your tap is already chlorinated. The water that you get out of your tap is already, you know, ready to go. So all you need is clean containers for this water. You need some, you know, some clean storage containers. And they suggest that the ideal storage containers to use would be just empty 2-liter bottles from soda. Or if you're not already buying your water pre-contained and want to store water, you know, this way, you just get empty 2 liters. You make sure the 2 liters are cleaned thoroughly. They recommend what you do is you add a small amount of bleach to a gallon of water, or what have you. Pour it into the 2 liter, shake it up real good, clean the 2 liter real good, pour that out, rinse it out completely, and then, you know, fill that up with water right out of the tap, crank down the cap, and put that away. And what you're going for is you want to have enough water. A gallon a day is what every person needs. Basically, it's enough so that you have enough water to drink and you have enough water to for food preparation and cleaning and what have you. And you take that water and you store it someplace dark because for some reason sunlight, you know, it affects water. It affects water quality. So you keep the water stored someplace dark. And you want to make sure that you have a gallon a day, and ideally you're looking at maybe 10 days. And depending on how prepared you want to be, you might want to go even longer than that. But, you know, a pretty simple thing, just putting this water away. And my girlfriend was actually talking to me about this. We go through all these steps. We go through these processes, and we store water. We have this water stored up. To what end, she said? To what happens if you never need it? So we got these bottles of water laying around, and you never have to use the water. Well, just a week or so ago, the water main here broke. So we were without water for the majority of the day, from like 10 in the morning until 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So it was inconvenient. I was inconvenienced by the fact that I didn't have running water. So having access to that stored water meant that I could still flush my toilet, that if I needed to prepare any food that involved boiling anything, well, I still had water. I had access to water to do those things. So even if it's something that never comes about, it still makes life a little bit easier to have taken those steps to prepare.
Right. And just real quick, Jason, to pop in here, the only thing that comes to my mind is your capacity to store enough water. I mean, how much water did you go through in that time frame that you were without water?
When we actually would have this situation go on, I actually didn't use any water. Okay, I had whatever I had to drink in my refrigerator, and that was it. So I had a 2-gallon pitcher of water in my refrigerator, and I didn't even go through the whole thing. So, you know, being keenly aware of the fact that there was no running water, that probably prevented me from, you know, drinking as much water as I might normally to be comfortable. I was aware that I was, you know, I was thirsty, I didn't have any water or whatever, but I had no clue as to when the water was coming back on. It wasn't an emergency. I wasn't expecting it to be more than a day. But that, you know, that was, you know, it was in my mind. As far as water storage, how much water you should store, again, the recommendation here is enough for 10 days, okay, for that situation. If you have the ability to store 3 months worth of water and you have the space, then store 3 months worth of water. If you only have enough space or enough, you know, enough storage space to store, you know, a day's worth of water, 2 days worth of water, well, again, it doesn't make any sense not to take that step. But it's to whatever, you know, whatever your abilities are, which is why I go back to Gurdjieff, and it's a matter of, you know, it's your own, what is your needs, what is your self-assessment, what do you need to do? Now, if you don't have the capacity to store large volumes of water, which I live in a 2-bedroom apartment, so I don't have the capacity, you know, 10 days of water is pushing it. If I live in the, you know, what I need to do then is know what other resources I have for water and how to sterilize, how to purify that water. And again, it's a matter of having, you know, knowing the different types of water that's out there. I don't know if people have seen the movie The Road, but if you saw the movie The Road, you saw that when the shit hit the fan, what this family did towards the beginning, you notice they filled up everything. They filled the tub full of water. They filled the sinks full of water. They, you know, just standing water and everything. They were getting water out of the back of this toilet and everything. You add, like, for every gallon of water, you add 8 drops of chlorine bleach, unscented chlorine bleach, and that will sterilize that water. That will make that water drinkable. If you're getting water, from nature someplace, or if you're pulling water out of a creek or what have you, you have to go a little further. You have to have some sort of filtration process that filters down to 1 micron. You have to boil the water. You have to do the chlorination yourself, 8 drops for every gallon or what have you. But you can go that route. They talk about, pool water. It's already heavily chlorinated, things like that. That's something that is, in an emergency, in a fix that you have access to if you have a pool, which I live in an apartment complex, so there happens to be a pool right around the block, that if you absolutely need it, that water's available. And, of course, it's already treated and chlorinated. Technically, it's drinkable water.
I would think that depending on whether or not the person who takes care of that pool, though, over-chlorinates it or not, because that's a lot of what I see here in Florida is pools that are over-chlorinated. But, yeah, that swimming pool's pretty smart. Zombie Holocaust, you need to, find your local Holiday Inn with a fucking Olympic-sized swimming pool out in the courtyard and stand your ground there.
Right on. And this is something that it's, again, having that mindset that this is something basic. We're used to having access to running water. Hell, we're used to having ice. I mean, wrap your head around that. The shit hits the fan, you've got all the fucking water in the world, but you've got no ice. Now, you don't need ice, but it's going to be a shift when everything you drink is warm. You got cases of soda sitting around. Let's say you like to drink soda. You got cases of soda sitting around, and there's a power outage, and you're without power for days. Well, you're drinking that soda warm. You're drinking your beer warm. I mean, and really, the way that beer was meant to be drank was warm. This is how beer was produced in ancient times. It was warm. It was not a cold beer. If you're going to be drinking your beer warm, that kind of thing. It involves a change in your value structures, a change in your perspective. And it's, again, the self-evaluation. What is it that you need to do? What is it that you need to know? What do you already bring to the table? Just real basic stuff. Again, check out that preparedness thing on the American Red Cross. And just real basic stuff that can make your life a little bit easier, even if it is just a minor power outage that lasts, a night. Having a flashlight, having extra batteries, having some sort of a hand crank radio so that if there's still radio transmissions going on, you can pick up those radio transmissions and get emergency information. Having a basic first aid kit. I mean, how many households do you know of that have that basic first aid kit that's required in every place of business? Having a toolkit, having multi-purpose tools, sanitation and hygiene items, your personal documents stored someplace in a waterproof bag that are easy to access so that if you need to grab your birth certificates, passports, IDs, and things like that, you just grab the bag. You don't have to dig for those things. All the family contact information, emergency blankets, maps of the area, just basic stuff. This is real simple to do, and it's something we've been encouraged to do all of our lives. If you think back, to the days when firemen used to come to elementary schools and talk to the kids about having evacuation plans, about having, these numbers and everything else, it's the same shit. It's just that now it seems more pressing that we actually take these steps.
Right on, man. I mean, the last thing in the world that you want is for something to go wrong and you be unprepared. I mean, I always laugh. People die, in floods. People die in hurricanes, and what normally kills them is not knowing how to react in the situation. It isn't the actual weather conditioning that's happening, but it's because they don't have a well enough developed set of survival skills in the emergency.
Right, it's complacency. I mean, we're encouraged to be complacent. We're encouraged to assume that the system will keep running. The United States will keep functioning. Your local city government will keep functioning. All the emergency services will keep functioning. It's as guaranteed as the sun rising the next day. And this is not the case. This is a human system. It is fallible. It can fail. It can break. It has broken in the past, and it will do so again in the future. And it's just a matter of, you know, if you're better prepared, if anything, think of it this way. If you're better prepared to take care of your family, to deal with these things, you're not beholden to those emergency services. You're not required to give up whatever little freedoms you might have in exchange for making sure that you have food and shelter. You're not going to have to deal with any of that because you've got yourself already taken care of to one degree or another.
Right on, man. I mean, one thing that strikes my mind right away is how many people can actually, without any electricity on, without any matches, be able to actually, without any lighters, be able to actually start a fire.
Yeah, man, I gotta be honest, I couldn't do it. I have a magnesium stick and a knife, you know. So, you know, I strike that magnesium stick and everything else, I'll get sparks. That would be my cheat. But as far as rubbing two sticks together or what have you, yeah, fucking forget it. I've tried it, man, and I couldn't do it. So, you know, this is, since I lack that skill, I don't smoke, and I've got a bucket full of lighters up in one of my cabinets. There are stick matches, there are waterproof matches in a couple different places in this house. I've got, you know, butane lighters. I've got all kinds of little torches and everything else. You know, I will be able to burn some shit down if it comes to that. But I understand the general principle as far as how to start a fire, the Boy Scout way with sticks and whatever. But I've never accomplished that feat. I've never been able to do it. And it's something, to be quite honest, now that I'm thinking about it, it's a lack. It's something that I need to maybe practice.
Right on, man. I mean, the first thing that I do myself, because I can actually start a fire several different ways, actually. I know how to recognize which rocks have a high enough density, and I can't remember what the actual term for it is. I think it's called, like, it's tack consistency or talc consistency or something. But there are certain rocks out there that are of the same consistency, and two rocks being knocked together when they have a high enough density to them will create a spark. So that's one thing, learning what rocks are out there, you know, learning what to look for in a rock, because I guarantee if you go out and pick up two of those smooth driveway rocks that you've got sitting out there or just down the road and try to crank those two things together, you're not going to get anything but fucking bruised knuckles.
Right on. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, that's one thing I would certainly say is the first thing that seems most important to me is to learn what items are in your general, you know, vicinity of where you're starting out to begin with, whatever that is, you know, so you know what kind of rocks are there, you know, you can use them as rocks, learn what kind of trees there are, because certain types of trees make for better hunting tools, and certain types of trees make for better building supplies. All of these things I think are important. Just knowing your environment and knowing how you can use your environment by itself limits the number of things that you actually even need to keep in your house. You know, we talked last week a little bit about your go bag. You know, well, you're not going to carry your whole bucket of lighters in that go bag. There's not enough room. You've got to have so many other things. So it's getting down to a set of tools that each tool has a multiple purpose. Each tool is, it's designed to work with the things that are in your environment already. Like, for instance, again, I'll refer back to my knife. I got a nice little Kevlar. That Kevlar there, I can use that for a million things. I can use it to fish. I can use it to hunt and tie it to the end of a stick, you know, make a spear out of it, whatever. I can use it to cut things down. I can use it to actually, you know, cut sewing wire. I mean, there's a million things that you can use that thing for. So that's a good tool to have, a good, strong, sturdy knife.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's actually a there was a duke. This is Denmark, I think, or what have you. This is decades ago, centuries ago. That he was actually still carrying a very ornate knife, as you know, just around. That was his thing. He always had a knife. He always wore a knife on him. This was when, for whatever reason, people stopped doing those kinds of things, especially in, you know, in the high society, in the courts and everything. And he was asked about that, and he says a man's not prepared without a good knife. So absolutely, you know, having that, having those tools, and having that, like you said, a multi-purpose tool, having the tools that are going to serve, you know, more than one function. You're absolutely right, because you want to reduce what it is you have to carry. You're not going to have a tool for every possible situation. So the more usage you can get out of whatever it is you're preparing, your go bag, your kit, the more you have that that serves multiple functions, the better off you are.
Right, and also, again, knowing your environment, because that'll help you to decide what tools are going to be best to take with you.
And that's a big thing, a part of the studying that I've been doing lately, is knowing my environment. And it's going to be different. It's different from area to area. There's no, like, I'm learning about what flora and fauna here in Texas are, you know, are edible or useful in some way, what's available, how to recognize it, and what's out there. And even if it's, I mean, this is from Abby Hoffman. Abby Hoffman, who wrote, you know, he was a protester and kind of a hippie of the 1960s and 70s. And Abby Hoffman wrote Steal This Book and talked about these exact kinds of things back in the 70s. They talked about how the system is designed to enslave people. The system is designed to, it robs you of your humanity. It takes things away from you that you think are inherent and tells you you still have them. And Abby Hoffman talked about how, you know, there are things that are called weeds out in the world that grow, you know, that are growing in every sidewalk. Every sidewalk crack has these particular kind of weed, and that this is actually a highly nutritious salad that you go to the grocery store and you'll see the exact same leaf in a lot of your salad mixes and everything else. And it's out there for free if you just have the will or to pick it. If you could recognize it and just pick it right off the street, edible and ready to go. But instead of doing that, instead of taking those steps and taking what is available to you for free, just for the effort of going out and reaching for it, we're taught that, you know, the only way to get that is to go to the grocery store and buy it in that plastic bag. And that's a problem we have in our society. Now, I keep saying this, I keep mentioning this in every show, it's those of us who grew up in the 70s and 80s who got used to the idea of there always being a 7-Eleven around the corner, there always being that quick, convenient way of seeing to your needs, that we're going to have the most difficult time, you know, getting around this, the most difficult time overcoming these issues.
Absolutely, man. I mean, it's actually absolutely amazing to me that I myself, I mean, I was a Boy Scout. I don't know if you know that, but I was a Boy Scout. I was actually given some training in these types of things. It was one of the things that we went through. I further then actually spent some more time training later in life on a military base with a special summer my uncle had planned for me. And I'm 34, almost 35 years old, and to be dead honest with you, dude, I remember slim to none of what I learned in those things. So the truth of it is, not only is it something that you need to learn, but it's something that you need to constantly refresh in your mind.
Right. It's something that as you study these things, as you learn how to store and purify water, as you learn how to find, you know, forage for food and everything, it just makes sense to start applying those things. Because if you're talking about your resources, this is what always blows my mind. People don't start trying to save for money until they need money. People don't start trying to use and maintain the things they have until they realize they're not going to be able to replace those things. It's never a concern until it's an emergency. And by the time it reaches that point, it's too late. It would make more sense to conserve your resources by engaging these things now. Not only are you keeping the knife sharp, basically, by practicing these skills, but you're cutting down on, you know, whatever you would, you know, whatever waste you'd have, you know, going on. I mean, if anything, you know, learning these little bits of, you know, hunting and gathering skills, these fire building skills, these different little things. Take a walk through your neighborhood, and when you leave your apartment, when you leave your home, shut off all of your lights, shut off your television, shut all that shit off. And what are you doing while you're out there educating yourself and getting to know what's around you and getting an idea of what your local environment looks like? Well, you're also saving yourself money on electricity because you're not in your apartment staring at the babble box, letting your brain rot.
Right on, man. And a couple of things I really just want to kind of step off to the side and make mention of, but I just want our listeners to be clear that this isn't us stepping up on some kind of pedestal and leaning over the pulpit to, preach at you folks. We're telling you these things because this is stuff that we've discovered ourselves. It's not us passing judgment on you, but passing information, as peers to you, because these are things that are honestly going on in our minds right now, as Jason was saying, in the beginning of the show and as we've expressed before. So that's the first little thing I wanted to tap on there. The next little thing that I wanted to tap on is the idea that because we're talking about these kind of things, because we're more focused on the practical side of it, sorry, I got a little tongue-tied there, because we're focusing on the practical side of it, that there's not the same level of enlightenment that there was on this show at one point in time. I would say quite the reverse, actually, that by encouraging you to get more in touch with, your environment, the man in nature itself, you remove the alienation that you created.
No, I agree with that totally. And if you folks want to call in, if you're listening to the show and want to call in, if you're catching it live, 347-989-1371, part of the reason we're engaged in this conversation, we're having this discussion about these topics, is we are still exploring these ideas. We're still trying to figure it out ourselves. We're still setting up our own action plan, our own exit strategies. And we want to hear from people that may have information that we don't have. We want to hear from people that may have ideas or come up with questions that we haven't even thought of. We want to, we want to take all that into account. We want to find out, we want to hear from people who are themselves engaged in these different processes so that we can learn from those folks. So by no means is this meant to be, us giving, a class. This is a discussion. This is kind of a roundtable. So we hope you come to the show, weekend after weekend, and we hope you go to eminentmind.info and check that out. And we want your feedback. We want you to be engaged in this conversation because, we recognize, and this is something we talk about, that all the preparedness in the world for an individual or a family is to have its limits, that at some point it's going to involve networking with, other people who have taken similar steps. I said earlier that in my apartment I might not have the ability to store a great deal of water, because I'm living in a two-bedroom apartment. But what I might have here, like I said, a bucket full of lighters. What I might have here are, several thousand rounds of ammo. Who knows? But what I might have here are things that, you didn't have, or you didn't have the time or the resources or the space to store yourselves, and there can be some negotiation if we, we're moving towards parallel goals. If you check out eminentmind.info, because we're talking about the practical aspect here, because TC and I guess we've been kicking around the ideology for a long time. We've been kicking around the philosophy for a long time. And we've come to the conclusion that while that discussion needs to continue, there's a practical application that needs to be discussed, and it's something that we need to implement, engaged in. And hopefully we run across other people who are also feeling that same way and implementing these things, and they can share their experiences and their ideas with us.
Right on, man. So, all right, water, fire, vegetation, learning your environment. I guess the next thing would be to gain a basic understanding of electricity, how to create it, and then how to harness it.
Right on. I mean, that's a basic skill set. I love the story of a Kentuckian in King Arthur's court. demonstrates, in my mind, how much was considered common knowledge back in that time. And one of those things was understanding how electricity moves, basic electricity. I did this guy, he sets up an electrical fence in one medieval part of the story, and that was considered common practical knowledge, knowing about the nature of electricity, how it moves, how to generate it, how to, how to manipulate it, that kind of thing. So it's just these kinds of things, these skill sets were at one time something that, father taught the son, basic mechanics on a car engine, basic mechanics on whatever, basically, small motor repair, that kind of thing, that now it's been lost, that are, it's easier just to pay some specialists to do that. And, our society of convenience has robbed us, again, of a lot of our freedoms, and we've given those things away.
Right on. I mean, and it's our own fault. That's the saddest part about it, man, is that we have had a choice our entire lives to this point to be engaged and fully responsible of not only our own actions, but our role in the environment that we exist in, and we're completely negligent of it.
Right. So, and again, these discussions hopefully will help people wake up to, not only that there are these other possibilities, because that's, I think, something that's been robbed of from our culture, the idea that there are other options, the idea that there are other possibilities. What's acceptable, what's normal is well-defined in our youth. We're told what it is we can or cannot do. We're told, what it is that we should or shouldn't believe, what thoughts we should actually have. And we need to kind of, as adults, mature and break away from this. We need to become self-determined. At least that's my feeling on this. So, and a lot of this is, again, if you're not reliant on the system, well, then you don't have to necessarily be obedient to it.
Right on. And obviously, the more you can do for yourself, the less that you have to have others do for you. So, that self-reliance that you're talking about is, in my opinion, probably one of the most important things that, a true matured adult should develop.
So if we started talking about, or you started talking about skill sets, and one of those skill sets being, understanding how to generate and harness electricity. Another skill set I was thinking of, from something really basic, is, how to make bread. How to go out and, what plants you're going to use, and how to pound that into flour, and what needs to be added to that flour, how to culture yeast, all that kind of thing. Bread is a basic food stock that has been part of almost every culture since the beginning of time. But if you ask me today to whip up a loaf of bread, the only way I can do it is by, walking down. If I don't have it already in my cupboard, I got to walk down to 7-Eleven and buy a loaf. I don't have the ability to make it myself. I don't even think I have the stuff in the house to make bread, if it came down to that. So this is just things to consider. Baking bread. I mentioned beer earlier, beer being, a warm drink. This is something that used to be drank warm. Well, one of the things I was reading about beer is that the reason that people would even started making beer, got into it, because, let's face it, beer does not taste good. beer is not something that you go, the first time you drink it, yeah, that hits the spot. But beer, what it was, is that the alcohol in it, going through that process, made the water safe to drink. So it was safer to drink beer than it was to drink water out of a stream or what have you. So they found that people who were drinking the beer actually were healthier. You live longer by drinking beer, which is why cultures like, European cultures like in Germany, kids drink beer still as part of the family tradition and everything, because way back when, that's how you kept your children safe.
Right on, man. I mean, entire cultures are built up around alcohol, and I think that's a real big reason for why during the Prohibition time there was such a backlash. So many people depended on it for this very same reasons, even into the turn of the 20th century.
Absolutely. And it used to be, back then, the moonshiners, basically, with their stills and everything. How many people today understand how the fermentation process works? How many people today could make their own beer without a kit
get the hops, get the wheat, get the barley, whatever, and do it themselves. Even making a wort, the basis of beer, it's an evolved process. Once you understand it, it's a fairly simple process. It just takes time and patience. But it's something that if you're not familiar with it, if you haven't taken the time to think about it or what have you, well, then what you have is you have to go back to the water filtration process we're talking about. You know, something that filters water down to 1 micron, adding bleach yourself to the water, boiling it and what have you, and still there's no guarantee of it being safe. Meanwhile, those of us who know how to make beer, not only is our drinking water, safe, but we're also getting a good buzz.
Hey, let's also throw in the fact that beer actually has a nutritional value outside of hydration as well. So,
right, and when we're talking about beer, we're talking about alcohol. I know we're kind of going off on a tangent here, but I think about our European ancestors and the mead halls. You know that the kings of these different countries, especially Northern Europe, were known, as much for their wealth, as much for their heroic deeds, as they were known for the quality of mead that they produced in their mead halls, as they were known for their parties, as they were known for these things. So now there was a sense of community in the mead hall that, you left your hovel, you left your home to join the king and his people and the court and everything else in the mead hall to share a meal together as a community to partake in the king's mead and what have you, and to share the news of the day, to kind of, to make sure that you still had those connections, you understood what was going on with your neighbors, you understood who needed what resources were out there or whatever, and you had a good time doing it. And then, of course, you're at the mead hall, so there's one big fire going, everybody, the bread's being shared, the game's being shared, it's all there and available for everybody to have, so your resources that you have back at your hovel aren't being burned through. Even the poorest member of the community, had part to play in producing what was there in the mead hall, therefore got an opportunity to partake in what was going on in the mead hall. And it's, a raucous party, basically, for my study of history and everything else. It's something I think that we need to get back to, something we need to talk about as far as networking and everything is concerned. Something I would like to implement, here in Austin eventually, and I got a couple of friends here in Austin, Texas, who, we kind of already do this, getting together on a regular basis, just to shoot the shit, just to see how we're each doing, making sure everything's still okay, making sure everything's cool, and enjoying a good time together. Go ahead.
I was going to say, when I was growing up in Ohio, my mom, having just lost my father, was extremely poor, and she had 2 children. Us kids, you would have never known it, though, because in that small community there in Ohio, people regularly, on a daily basis, if not at the very least weekly, got together for these huge cookouts or dinners together. You would have the entire neighborhood over in your backyard, and everybody would bring a little dish, a potluck or whatever you want to call it. And so there was, like, at least if a family didn't have anything in their house to eat, they could come out and at least get something to eat there and have some nutrition for the day. So what ended up happening, though, that I noticed was that the total bill for it was actually less expensive when done in bulk like that than it would have been if people had eaten individually as just smaller family groups. So I thought that was interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. It used to be in Indiana. It used to be, there was a huge family gathering every year. So, these different families from across the tri-state area would all come together and they'd meet for the year. And it seemed like every so many months, it was the extended family, my grandparents and my aunts and uncles and my father, my brothers and everything else would all get together and share a meal. And every month or so, it was my immediate family. We all made sure we got together. All my brothers, all my sisters, my father, and all these different people, their kids and everything else. we'd all get together and we'd be sharing a meal. And we've gotten away from that as a culture. And this is something that it's insidious, in my opinion, that this is, but it is there, that this is a system-initiated process, the breakdown of the individual so that they feel isolated, so that the only option you have, you can't turn to your family, you can't turn to your community, you have to turn to the system. You have to turn to the government that's around you. Or if there's if a community is something available for you to turn to, well, it's resources that are sponsored by the government. It's a community that's tapped into that system. And that's the only thing you have to go to. You don't have your family you can turn to anymore. And I know that, you know, our audience is largely, you know, leans away from mainstream religion. I'm not saying that you should run off to your church or whatever to get involved in a church social, but it's that mentality that these, you know, these churches try to maintain that sense of community and to help spread the resources around voluntarily. They have these socials, they have these gatherings so that people can come in and, like you're just saying, bring in a dish of food and everything else, and everybody shares and what everybody else has, and it's an opportunity to, you know, shoot the breeze and have a good time and what have you. And this is something that those of us who think individually, I think we need to come back to that. I think we need to move towards that because, again, as an individual, your resources, your ability to prepare, your ability to maintain and to gather and do all that, it's going to hit its limit. Where if it's two of you working in concert, that just improves things. If it's three of you working in concert, even more, and so on and so forth, until, I mean, you end up having that community of people that you can count on that are, you know, they're also counting on you.
You know, it kind of blows me away. Growing up, I learned that the American dream was, you know, to get this job and have this huge financial success and have your own mansion somewhere off in the middle of the woods and be isolated from people and be able to, you know, afford whatever greater things that you wanted in life. But what blows me away now, looking back, is that during those times when I was the poorest, it was the time that I was actually living the American dream as it should be. You know, we had, I had a lot of friends, a huge family, huge extended family, and that the friends that were friends of the family, they, you know, it was like more family. They weren't treated any different than you treated your brother or sister. They were part of the group, you know. You have 40 or 50 rugrats running around playing, the adults having conversations, sharing information. Everybody tended to be a little more intellectually steeped, if I can say that, with not having any merit to it. There was some drinking and some fun going on, but overall, the focus was on developing not only the group and securing the community, but developing the individuals as well. I can remember particularly one conversation that went down about my youngest uncle. He was sitting around and he was talking about what type of work that he wanted to go into, and you know, the entire community knew him from the time he grew up. And somebody piped up and said, "Hey man, you know, you've always been good with good with plants. You should get into agriculture." And amazingly enough, that worked very well for him.
Mm-hmm. And we're away from that. You know, we're away from that, you know, that idea that, you know, this community mentality where you are part of something. You know, you're an individual, but part of your strength is drawn from the interconnectivity you have with those around you. And if you folks, again, want to call in, 347-989-1371, we're going into, looks like, our second hour here in a moment. We're talking about right now preparedness, you know, different things that you can do, whether it's, you know, gathering resources, storing food and water, having, you know, an emergency plan, making sure that you have certain, you know, certain resources and the reasoning for that, whether it's, you know, dealing or preparing for an emergency, or if it's just putting some, you know, putting a buffer between you and having to rely on the system, whether it's having to rely on the local grocery store, having to rely on the local government, having to rely on emergency services and everything else, making sure that there's a comfort zone between you and those systems, that you're a little bit more self-sufficient and therefore have a little bit more freedom. We're also getting into the idea of networking with like-minded people, and we want to hear from other folks, want to hear about their ideas. So, again, the number is 347-989-1371 if you want to call in.
Right on. Well, I don't expect anybody to really have the brass to pick up the phone and call. I mean, I don't know if you saw in the chat room, but some jackass popped in a little bit ago and made a smart-ass comment. I mean, people really don't take this serious, and that kind of disturbs me to a point. But to another point, I feel a little bit of comfort there, and I'll tell you why. Because I know that these people, when shit does hit the fan, won't survive, so they won't be drawing off the resources that I'm trying to cultivate.
Well, and it's the fact that this the show gets out to so many different people, the fact that, you know, you can actually, these people pop in and pop out. I mean, the guy that we're talking about, this isn't his first time to the show. I think he just digs the idea that we're called the Ooze, and that this is, for whatever reason, it amuses him. But when he's ignored, he goes away pretty quickly. I know this show is, the topic's a downer. It's something that it is kind of, you know, it is depressing to sit there and say, hey, look, you know, let's face up to reality. Let's be a little bit more mature in your mentality. These things that you've come to expect, that you've come to rely on, you're setting yourself up for failure if you're reliant on them completely. You're setting yourself up for failure if you lack the foresight to prepare to deal with these things on your own, to prepare for the day that those things you rely on fall away. So it's not the most fun topic to talk about and to listen to. But I know we're also putting these shows out there kind of for the archive, with the intention that, you know, if you don't listen to this live, hopefully the information will be out there and get you talking. I know that, you know, we might not have callers calling in, but I know we're getting email. I know we're getting hits on eminentmind.info, and we're getting questions about it, that people are checking things out. And they're coming from all kinds of diverse places, places that are pro-views, pro-TC Downey, pro-Jason Sorrell, and people that have been against us in the past. And they're starting to, you know, hopefully they're starting to question themselves, their preparedness, what's going on around them. They're starting to maybe see a little bit more and becoming more awake and more aware than they were before, because that's a big part of our thing, is increasing awareness. It's a self-developmenting thing, but once you start developing that extra, that greater awareness, that greater sense of self and the environment, the more you can't look away, the more you can't ignore that there are certain things you should be doing that you're encouraged generally not to even think about.
Right on. And I actually want to kind of chime in here and say that this conversation should not be viewed as a downer. This conversation should be a sort of a pep talk, you know, get you excited about, you know, developing yourself. I mean, what man doesn't want to be able to say, hey, you know, I didn't have to buy any meat this month because I got out there and I killed, you know, I killed a deer, and I did it not with a rifle, but with, you know, a crossbow or a spear or a bow and arrow. You know, I went old school on it. I mean, there's nothing that'll make you prouder of yourself than thinking that you could survive in this environment, in the natural environment, without all of the artificial things that we're so used to.
Right, and that highlights the problem I think we're kind of talking to you about this system, about these issues that we're facing. That these things should be, we're talking about basically winning some of your freedoms back. We're talking about basically winning some of your liberties, that choosing to take these things for yourself rather than relying on other people to give them to you. So this is talking about basic freedoms. And what you're saying is, you know, there's a time when, yeah, you definitely should be proud to have gone out and, you know, you hunted a deer with a spear. You know, you made your own bow and arrow, and that's how you killed a deer or what have you. You have all those skills, all those resources. But now people look at that and look at it like, well, you had to hunt that animal yourself. You didn't have the cash on you to go to the fucking grocery store and buy that meat. You had to go hunt that animal yourself. They felt like you had to be in that position. You know, sports hunting, I think that's ridiculous. I think sports hunting is ridiculous because you're doing for entertainment what should be done as just a common thing to do. And the reason you have to do it for entertainment, the reason it has to be a hobby, is because if you relied on, you know, hunting, food, and game as your primary means of, you know, of sustaining yourself, well, then the rest of society would consider that unacceptable. And it's that mentality that's been engendered in us. It's that mentality that's been kind of forced upon us that has us screwed up as a nation, that has us going in the direction that we're going right now, downhill. So it's time to reclaim those things. At least that's – it's time for me. I think TC feels this way as well. It's time to reclaim these things for ourselves and to hopefully by reaching out to others, by sharing this information, that we'll have, you know, we'll have other people to trade stories with, you know, who appreciates the idea that, you know, I tied my K-bar to it at the end of a stick and went on to that, down that fucking thing, and I had to, it took me 3 hours to drag that damn thing back to the campsite, but the, you know, the meat you're eating tonight is through that effort.
Right on, man. I mean, there's just something in my mind that is amazing about the idea of actually being back in the natural order of environment, not in this artifice that we exist in right now. I mean, to me, I, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that you know, I'm used to certain things and I've got to kind of slowly wean myself off of this system, I'm all for fucking grabbing my tent and never coming back again.
Yeah. No, I feel that way too. I mean, that's something. I mean, it's come up in other conversations on the Satanic International Network, who sponsor the Ooze, by the way. So check them out, www.satanicinternationalnetwork.com. We've talked to other people who have this kind of ideology going, and they're talking about, you know, different things as far as relating, you know, how to relate to the system, how to deal with the system, and how to confront and take down the system. And while I don't agree with necessarily everything they say, when I've said, you know, why not just turn your back on it? Why not go walk out, wander off into the woods and do whatever? I recognize that that's not necessarily the goal that we're shooting for. It's being prepared to do so. Having the freedom to do that, having that preparedness to do so, you know, it's liberating. And in many ways, I agree. If sometimes it almost makes more sense. You know what? Fuck it. I'm not going to deal with this today. I'm going to grab my backpack and my, you know, my tent and my sleeping bag or whatever, and I'm hitting the fucking road. I'm the fuck out of here. We have other obligations. We have other things going on. And it isn't the responsible thing to do at this point to just turn our back on society and walk into wander in the woods. And I think, you know, I enjoy my computer. I enjoy the laptops and the little conveniences I have. And I'm thankful for the progress of science. I'm thankful for the medicines and the cures and the different things that are out there. But it's gotten to a point where, you know, my security is not worth the liberties I'm being asked to give up. And that's the issue I think we're trying to stress here on the Outbreak Edition, is that it's time to start reclaiming some of these liberties.
Right on. Something I kind of was just thinking about going back to the hunting scenario, one of the things that I would make the statement of is, should you get into a position like we're talking about, this zombie holocaust, post-nuclear war type scenario, or whatever, it would make more sense, even if you had a large supply of ammunition and guns, that instead of going out to shoot what you're going to eat, you save the ammo for deflecting, you know, intruders, basically, and, you know, go old school with hunting.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. It's, you know, arrows are, you go get the arrow, you pull the arrow out of the animal, and you have that arrow to use again. Arrows require, you know, some maintenance, but when you fire a bullet, unless you have the tools and the means to take that shell, you know, refill it with powder, recast the bullets itself, and put that whole thing back together again, which is risky, you're better off having those bullets for your defense. And this is common stuff. Fishing. TC is talking about living by the coast and everything else. I love fish, you know. And fishing. What do you need to fish? A metal hook, if that. The jaw of a fish, it has been used in the past as a fishing hook. a worm. You dig it out of the earth and everything else, and a string, just enough line that, can hold the weight of that fish when you drag it out of the water. You don't even need a stick. You don't need a rod or any of that to fish. So it's these things that are, that are available to you, these things that that you need to start thinking about, or I think need to start thinking about. And again, I keep saying you and everything else. It's not preaching. It's things that that I'm thinking about that more and more seem like a good idea. More and more it seems like a better way to use my resources and my time than what's offered to me by the system that we're dealing with.
Absolutely, man. A couple of things. I think, talking about the implementation is awesome, the preparedness, but there's something that we've mentioned in the show before, and I just wanted to kind of point out that it is the very beginning of preparedness, and that is raising awareness, talking to other people about this. Communication is so key. It's the one thing that we can do better than any other species on this planet is communicate. So why not work with our strength and use this to exchange these ideas and stuff? So I guess with that in mind, I kind of wanted to make mention, because this was suggested to me last night by Ronald French in the Sin chat room. And it's something that I'm planning on actually doing. And hopefully, Jason, you'll follow suit. And I'm going to talk to the other dudes on that do the other shows here on the Ooze. What I actually want to do is start signing up for all of these groups on Facebook, all of these like-minded thinkers on Facebook. And I want to kind of make it a point, even when the show's not running, to at least a couple of times a day drop a link in to an episode that just occurred, or to whatever, announce when the next live show is going, and to constantly keep people aware that this is happening, and hopefully we'll get more people tuning in and touch the type of people that we're actually talking about touching. Because, to be honest, the few hundred that listen to this show on a regular basis, they may or may not be the people that I'm trying to get into touch with, or you are, or we are, the kind of people that we're trying to align ourselves with. And so I think it's time that we maybe spread out a little more in terms of getting the message out, so to speak.
Well, absolutely. And it's a matter of the pool of people that we normally deal with. The question is, do they have those resources? Do they have the ambition, the concern, the vision, or what have you, the value set that makes them want to take action, that makes them want to actually start implementing some things, to start networking, to start really getting engaged and getting involved? And, we may have tapped that pool, as far as we can. I expect there will be others, especially as this moves forward from the pool that we have. But I think you're absolutely right. Stretching out and getting out. And it's not just a matter of getting our message out to other people. We need to start hearing what other people are saying. We need to start hearing, from these other people and seeing what's going on and making sure that, if they got a plan, if they got this thing already, going, that we're involved in that, that we're able to take advantage of that as well. It's definitely not a matter of, it doesn't have to be centralized on the Ooze or Eminent Mind. We can reach out to other things. So yeah, I'm all down for that.
Right on, man. So I just pretty much wanted to throw that out there and also pat Ron on the back, because I'm always the first to point when I don't think Ron's doing something right. But in this case, Ron was dead right. Yeah, you got what I'm saying.
Right on. Yeah. He had a good idea, so absolutely. Yeah, he deserves some credit for that. And Ron is really about networking. Ron is really about drawing different people together and building on their commonalities. He's got some different ideas about things. He's got some perspective on things that I don't necessarily agree with all the time. But Ron French, as far as, wanting to see the best in people, I think, is it's at the forefront of his mind. It might not always come out that way, but I don't think he's actively looking for people to fail. He wants to see success.
he might define that different ways than other people. He might see, you know, see different directions than that people don't see, or think things should go down a certain way that may not be the case. But the bottom line is Ron Prince tends to be a good guy.
Right on, right on. And actually, what's really kind of funny is since we've started all this discussion, man, he daily drops a valuable link that's pertinent to what we've been discussing on my Facebook page. Ron himself has been responsible for introducing me to ideas that I had not been exposed to up until this point. So, you know, that just kind of shows what open communication, like I'm discussing or talking about here, really could lead to.
Right on, right on. And it is, again, it's part of the, even the Red Cross, as part of their thing, is, you know, self-preparing yourself, developing some sort of plan, having some sort of, you know, if the shit hits the fan, or if you need to, if there is an emergency, what it is you're going to do, who you're going to connect with, how you're going to connect with it, that kind of thing. And then education. And it's education involves communication. It involves reaching out to different people who have different ideas. It involves, you know, learning as much as you possibly can on as many different topics that you think will be necessary, as, you know, as often, as frequently as possible. So, you know, education doesn't happen without communication. So definitely, and if folks want to communicate with the Ooze, and I kind of have a ham-handed segue to the phone number, 347-989-1371 if you want to call in, or if you want to send us emails if you're catching the show on the archive, you can message us through the Ooze, or you can drop an email to SorrellArt, SorrellArt, @hotmail.com, or TC, do you want to give them your email address?
Yeah, they can get a hold of me at TDowney@TwistedBeast.com. It's TwizedBeast.com.
And another resource that we're using is eminentmind.info. This is a blog. We're talking about a lot of the practical stuff here on the Ooze. A lot of the ideas that are behind this push, a lot of the philosophy, the ideology, if you will, it's being developed on Eminent Mind. And I know we're going to come back to that eventually here on the Outbreak, you know, edition. But we're going to start focusing or start talking about that philosophy. But I think it's after we've talked out the application, which, you know, we maybe years from now. But on eminentmind.info, a lot of these ideas, you see how they were born. You see how these things have come about. You see the development of an attitude, if you will, the development of a perspective, of a level of awareness, and what that means to us, how that comes about, what we have done to kind of get to this point in our heads. So that's another way for you to communicate with us, is going to checking out eminentmind.info and, you know, commenting on the things you read there. And we're looking for, we're looking for more sly men. We're looking for more people who have that attitude, who have that sense of awareness that makes what they have to say, makes their experiences, makes their perspectives invaluable and contributable to whatever it is we're trying to accomplish.
Right on, man. Sorry, I couldn't click the unmute quick enough to actually respond without there being that couple second lapse. That's the one downfall about whatever happens on Sunday nights here, because last night, we had the same setup, dude, and I didn't even click the mute button one time, and we talked for about 30 minutes, no echoes. So I would like to point out that the overarching idea that I've got going here in my mind about this show and Eminent Mind is that when we began as humans reaching for a higher understanding of things, we kind of forgot that higher understanding is drawn from our own primal nature, from our essence as we were actually evolved in nature. It doesn't come from, you know, staring at the TV for 16 hours, you know, to really reach the platforms of enlightenment that we're talking about, you almost kind of have to reach back to a state that you were prior to what we now refer to as being civilized.
Right, right. What I think we have going on here is we're reaching for freedom. And when we're talking about freedom, we're talking about taking risk. We're talking about freedom to fail. If you look at the direction of our society, people think they are owed things. So this is, we are a very entitlement-based society right now. You look at, I mean, even corporations, banks, too big to fail. How is that anything to do with the American way, the way of Western culture, that something is too big to fail, something is too important to fail? If it fails, that's evolution. If it fails, it needs to fail and get out of the way so that something better, something newer can come into place. You need that risk. You need that ability to fail. You need to be able to learn from your mistakes. If that option isn't given to you anymore, if you don't have that ability to learn from your mistakes, to take that risk, if you don't have the ability to fail anymore, well, then your success, whatever success you're going to have, is already predetermined by something outside yourself. Whatever you are going to achieve has already been set up for you, and you will achieve no more. So any ambition you have, any hope that you have to be more than whatever it is you are, is squashed by that security blanket, by that predetermined, preset parameters that says that you get this allotment of whatever it is you're going after. You get this allotment of the American dream, and that's all you get, and you should be satisfied with that. That's not a left-hand pathway of thinking. That's not and at least in the America that I was taught about as growing up, that's not the American way of thinking. That's not a humane way of thinking in my mind. That a human being who doesn't have the right, the ability to go out and try and, you know, fail or succeed one way or the other, when that's robbed of you, your basic humanity is taken from you.
Right on. I didn't lose you here, did I? Oh, no, there you are. You're still there. All right. I'm right there with you. The whole thing of it is that just as Gurdjieff expressed in the fourth way about needing to develop all three parts of your being at the same time, I think that philosophically you have to look at it from the perspective of you know, the higher, more esoteric level and the practicality at the same point.
Right on. Absolutely. And it's trying to fire on all cylinders, basically, trying to make sure that you're well-balanced. And it's Gurdjieff's teachings pushed a philosophy, pushed an ideology, but it's applicable to life, to pretty much every aspect of whatever it is you got going on, which is why he insisted that you do these things in the real world, that you don't, you know, the idea, the concept of identity, that it does you no good to pretend to be something you're not. It does you no good to create an identity, to create a false sense of self, when there's a real sense of self. There's a real person out there that is waiting to be discovered, that there's this real person, this real you, that you have the ability to tap into and find out what that's all about. And when you're finding out what that's all about, when you're tapped into that, well, then nobody can define that for you. Nobody can tell you what that is. You're self-determined, and when you have that self-determination, people can't take that away from you. And this is, we're talking about that kind of concept, that kind of thinking, and applying it not just to the sense of self, but our very lives, our very resources, our very way of doing things. So it all falls back to that fourth way mentality, and I think we take it kind of in a little different direction than what you see going on with the fourth way as far as the Gurdjieff Foundation or other organizations like that. We're not altruistic. We're very selfish. We're very self-centered. We're very focused on, you know, our own needs and our own, you know, our own desires and urges. So it's not a let's hold hands, kumbaya kind of thing. It's just what's practical, what's going to make sure that I have the best chance of survival.
Right on, man. I mean, ultimately, it's you know, to take it even one step further and to say it's not only to make sure that you have, you know, the best chance of survival, but it's also to ensure your own dominance over, over others that might be predators. And I don't necessarily mean people, but I mean anything that's predatory in nature.
Right. Well, yeah, it's not just about survival. It's about thriving. I guess you're absolutely right that if you wanted substance-based living, if you wanted just enough to get by, well, then the system's perfect for you. Our system, our society, it's a society that offers mediocrity. The most you can hope for is the mediocre. Anything else is just it's just happenstance. It's just luck that you fall into that situation. The option for greater opportunity for to be able to work harder and achieve, that's going away. It's going away to be traded for entitlements. It's going away and being traded for security. Give me risk. Give me the opportunity to succeed or fail. These are things I want to develop on my own. So absolutely, it's everything you've been saying so far.
Right on, man. So I guess what we should be saying is, at the very least, if you don't call in here and talk to us, pop on to eminentmind.info and discuss these ideas with us.
Right. Right. If you're not discussing these ideas with us, take a look at the information we're putting out there. Go to that American Red Cross website. Check out these different resources. Google this shit. Figure it out. How to make beer. How to sterilize water. What amount of food is a good idea to store? What kind of things should you be doing? What is the threat of economic collapse? What is the threat of a change in our society? What is the threat of different natural disasters? Dig into that information for yourself and then share it with the people, around you. So even if you're not engaged in this particular effort, in this particular movement, do something. Take action. Get involved, for your own benefit, for your own security. Do something for yourself. Because the sooner you start doing things for yourself, the sooner you discover what liberties are yours to have.
Right on, man. I mean, I think that's one thing our founding fathers of this country had on us today, currently. They knew what they were capable of. They went out and worked in this shit all day long. They weren't just... They weren't just sitting around getting served by people. They actually, contributed things to their own survival as well as to their clansmen or their, whatever you want to call it, the people in their community.
Right. Well, there definitely wasn't a sense of entitlement. The founding fathers definitely weren't out there creating different programs for people to get engaged in that would provide for whatever their needs happen to be. These people, say what you will. I mean, you can talk about how these folks, they established the system. They went with whatever, capitalism, whatever, whether it was intentionally set up the way that it was set up or the workers ended up bearing the burden and the elite got to succeed, or if that's just the nature of capitalism. It seems like in every system where you're talking about applied communism, socialism, what have you, there's a ruling class and then there's a class of workers to support the ruling class. In my mind, it's, all these systems suck. And the more reliant you are on those systems, well, then the more they're going to suck. And it's until you take up for yourself, until it's, these founding fathers, when they would show up for Congress or whatever, they would do their thing for a month or two, and then they get the hell out of there and get away from government to go back home to their lives. This is something we need to get back to, this mentality that, whatever resources I have, I need to make sure I'm utilizing those resources to do as much for myself as possible. That part of the thing that we need to do is wean ourselves from the system. It's a gradual process. You can't just, try to turn your back on things right now because you'll fail. Let me put it another way, more than likely you will fail. There may be some success stories out there, but more than likely you'll find yourself destitute, and you'll find yourself even more beholden to that system. So if you can begin to wean yourself from, this system, if you can begin to become more independent and create that buffer so that if there is an economic downfall that and the country is forced to declare martial law, you're less impacted by that because you can get the hell out if you need to. You can, you know, you can hit the trail if you need to get away from that because you've already taken the steps to prepare yourself. Whereas if you haven't actually taken those steps, if you're not actually engaged in that process, well, when that economic collapse occurs and when the states declare martial law, the control will unravel. It might not be you that reacts that way, but it's all those people that have come to depend on those entitlement programs. When they cut loose because their welfare checks aren't coming anymore and they lose their shit and start looting, you know, door to door, you have the ability not to rely on the system for your protection. You're already gone.
Right on, man. Right on. I mean, to me, it seems like common sense, but we've actually got a question in the chat room I wanted to kind of bring up. It says, Tim is Hardcore wants to know if we believe that in the coming economic downfall, this country is going to declare martial law. Do we think that that's the case? From my perspective, I absolutely do. I think that what's going to happen is when they can no longer, you know, keep the blinders on, when there's no more of, oh, things aren't really that bad, when it's just blatantly obvious that, you know, the economy is completely crapped out, then at that point, they're going to have no choice but to in place martial law.
Right, and it's going to be a gradual process. That's the other thing that's going to happen. As the economic collapse, the economic downturn, you know, continues, what you're going to be seeing, of course, you've got unemployment at a new, you know, incredibly high rate. There's a double-digit unemployment now, which is not the norm. Normally we're well below 9% or whatever. Normally we're closer to 5% or what have you. Now we're seeing double digits. Now you see, I think, and we think we talk about those numbers. We talk about unemployment at 13%, 14%, 15%. That's counting the people who are on the rolls. That's not counting the people who have stopped looking for a job. That's not counting for the people that that no longer apply for unemployment because they've given up. So if we're talking about 15% unemployment on the rolls, we might be talking about 20 or 25% unemployment across the country. If these people aren't able to fend for themselves, what you'll have are you'll have pockets of people who make a run on the government, basically, make a run on those resources. So let's say, you know, in Los Angeles, you know, there's this kind of riot that breaks out or whatever over food stamps because the food stamps don't arrive on time or they're not there. Then you're going to have martial law declared in that area to quell that. And what you'll see is just how effective the system comes down on those people who are rioting. You'll see this on television. It'll be the way that they discourage these things from occurring, even though they're happening more rapidly. When martial law isn't able to be declared in an area, you won't hear about the news story. If, let's say, here in Austin, Texas, the Social Security checks, the welfare checks weren't being cut anymore. The money wasn't going anywhere. Let's say it gets even worse. Let's say we reach a point economically where your dollar isn't worth shit, that you take your money to Walmart and Walmart's saying they're not taking your dollars anymore. If that were to happen and people lost their shit, if the military wasn't able to come in and actually quell that kind of, you know, violent reaction, then you're not going to hear that story. But as far as the whole nation declaring martial law, well, that would require that the whole nation uprise, you know, rise up as one and lose their shit, basically, go into a riot. So it's going to be pockets of resistance, met by pockets of force. And the question in my mind is, do I want to be in between those things? You know, do I want to be engaged in that with those people who haven't prepared in advance, who are picking up sticks and stones and taking on machine guns? Do I want to have to deal with those people? And do I want to have to deal with the people that have machine guns that are going door to door and processing people so they don't have to worry about those people revolting? Personally, my plan is to not be around when that shit happens. How I'm going to make that happen, I have no idea. You know, having the resources in advance, having that go bag ready to go, and making sure that I have a plan, and if I have enough advance warning, then I'm getting the hell out.
Right on, man. I think in the circumstance where you don't have enough advance warning, it's also going to be completely necessary that not only do you know how to defend yourself, but you know the quickest way to disable your opponent, and if necessary, the quickest way to kill, the most effective way to kill. And the last thing you want to do is, you know, have a 45-minute long fight when you could have had, you know, a 2-minute altercation, and then you were, you know, getting the hell out of Dodge before things all really started to break down.
Right. That's the best way to win a fight is not to be there when the fight shows up at your doorstep. The next best way is there's no such thing as a fair fight. Whatever you're talking about, the survival of you and your family, whatever fucking thing you need to do to end the fight. I ran around a bunch of knuckleheads as a kid, and I guess especially when I got out of the army. There was always talk about, you know, tough shit and everything else. And especially when you're dealing with somebody who was a soldier and everything else, there was always that guy that, you know, wanted to see, wanted to know, what is it you learn, what is it you do, what is it you're capable of. And, you know, the way I avoided a lot of, you know, fucked up situations with my drunk, crazy friends was to simply say, if we had to get into a fight, I need to make sure that you can't get back up after I'm done with you. Because if you can get back up, you're still a risk to me. So whatever happens, whatever's going down, I'm going to stop you in a very literal sense. Okay, and that usually ended the discussion about any type of, you know, confrontation, any type of conflict. I see here Tim's Hardcore is in the chat room, and he's making some comments. Tim, if you want to call in, 347-989-1371. We got about 25 minutes left. You're talking about, you know, you and your family getting some backpacks ready for the essentials and heading to the hills if needed. I don't see, again, when the collapse occurs, I see it being a gradual collapse. I see it sputtering here and there. You're going to have this neighborhood, this city, that kind of thing. And when martial law is declared, they're going to be able to slap those things down very quickly. So in your area, the shit hits the fan and you get the hell out, and then you're going to get the all clear, and you're going to be invited to come back into the city and everything will be normal again. But it's going to happen more and more frequently, more and more rapidly. You're going to have these uprisings and things like that, that eventually the city won't be safe. I guess my question is that when you head out to the hills, these backpacks are taken with you. How long are those resources going to last? How many months are you prepared to be out in the woods, away from society, away from civilization? Because it's a question I'm asking myself. It's a question I'm asking about for my family's sake. How long is long enough? How much is necessary? And other than having, you know, a couple of cargo vans ready to grab me, my kids, and our supplies and head out into the woods for a 6-month stay, the only other answer I can come up with is talking to other people who are taking these same steps and talking about what we can do as a group to make sure that we are safe as a group and that we have the resources we need to thrive as a group without having to rely on whatever's going on with the government.
Right on, man. Right on. I mean, I think the group thing is definitely, it's the way to go. There's, you know, strength in numbers, but only to a certain point. You know, it's when you create these mass societal structures, or at least this is my opinion, these mass societal structures are what make us weak, because you're so padded that you don't really have an understanding of the threat the actual environment has around you.
Well, when you don't know who you're dealing with, when you're getting a check in the mail and it's X number of dollars, and you know, whatever it is, $1,200 a month, let's say it's your welfare check, it's whatever entitlement you get. When you get that check and you don't know the people whose funds were pulled out of their pockets to provide for that check, when it's coming from the government, and you don't have to face the fact that it's coming from your neighbors, it's coming from your children. That's the thing that our country is doing right now. Is we're spending our children's future. That's what's happening. We're borrowing from the future to pay for the present. And when you don't have to give a shit about those people, when you don't have to look them in the eye, that's where things become problematic. That's where the system really fucking takes things downhill, which is why they don't want us to be related, to have communities. They don't want us to reach out to one another. They want us to feel individualist. You know, they want us to feel isolated, basically. So, yeah, it's more about we have to reach out to one another. We have to look at each other in the eye, and we have to start, if we're going to be talking about any type of alternative community situation, it has to be small groups of people. It has to be people where everybody knows everybody else. So everybody understands that when you don't pull your own weight, your friends suffer, your neighbors suffer, your children suffers, everybody around you suffers when you don't pull your own weight, so that you have that pride again in doing what you need to do to make sure that everybody around you is taken care of to the best of your ability. These villages in ancient Japan, villages in Japan before the turn of the Industrial Revolution, what have you, where every villager knew who was in that village, and everybody had an individually set task that they were trained in and expert in, and everybody strove for perfection at whatever task they had, because they knew that the better their effort, the more success for the whole. And that they were as beholden, they were as reliant on the people around them as the people were reliant on them. It's that kind of community, I think, that we need to get back to.
Yeah, I've made a similar statement time and time again, too, that small-town America going away is where things really started to fall apart. And it would be nice, again, to see that kind of thing, I mean, because that would be about the only way that we could ever make this thing turn around and still exist within its current structure.
I want to address the comment that Tim is Hardcore has made in the chat real quick. We got about 20 minutes left. Tim sees martial law being declared regardless that the government will take advance action. Tim, I would point out that when the government does something like that, when the government does something overt, we're declaring martial law, what they're doing is they're inviting resistance when they do that. They're inviting the people to rise up against that force. What our governments have learned to do is to not invite that challenge by gradually implementing these things. So one of the things I would suggest, one of the things I would ask people to consider is consider that the possibility that the government has already declared martial law, and that martial law is being implemented gradually, and that we're being convinced to accept martial law, accept this gradual acceleration restriction on our liberties, one piece at a time. This will make us more secure. This will make us more safe. This will make sure that you have the resources that you need. That we're being tagged and bagged basically slowly at our own consent, rather than blatantly and overtly with the opportunity to resist. So I don't think you're going to see the government as a whole go, we're declaring martial law, show up at this center to be processed. I think eventually it's going to be, you show up at work, and that's part of your processing.
Right on, man. Right on, man. I think that that's absolutely what's already happening. There's a lot of things that I've heard talked about over the years. For a few years, there was a scare of that little identification chip being put into everybody, and then the Amero dollar being the unit of trade that would be readable by that identification chip. And, these type of things would be introduced to us as something that's going to be beneficial for us. It's going to make things all better. As a matter of fact, I'm going to rewind here a little bit today, and I was having a conversation at a little family get-together we had earlier, and one of the things that was kind of pointed out to me was the fact that with this new healthcare system that's coming out, that's going to be mandatory. Everybody was so convinced that, this is going to be the solution, Obama's healthcare bill. But it turns out the current projections right now are that it's going to be 3 to 4 times more expensive than if you were to pay for these things out of pocket right now by your own choice. But that by them putting a required spending on you from the time that you're old enough to work or whatever, that ultimately it's going to be more costly to you than what it would be if they just gave you a little bit of training in how to manage your money in that same segment.
Right, right. It's cost that you can measure in economic terms, just like you're talking about, but to also measure it in ideological terms, in the sense of liberty being traded in exchange for this. The thing you're pointing out about the microchip, the ability to, you know, that you're not going to be able to go and spend your money at a local store or whatever. Let me try to wrap your head around this, if you will. I would say that your ability to trade freely is already gone. Okay, once they introduced the dollar, and once the dollar, gold standard went away on the dollar, and the only way you can buy, sell, or trade anything in the United States is with that dollar. Try taking pesos, Mexican pesos, to your local grocery and buying a box of 69-cent macaroni and cheese. They won't take that money. Okay, even though it's legal tender in another country, they won't take that money. So if you don't have American dollars, if you're not engaged in that system, you do not have the ability to buy, sell, or trade. Try going to your local grocery store and offering to sweep floors for a box of macaroni and cheese. They will not take that labor. They will not. They're not allowed to. You don't have the ability to trade whatever services you're able to provide for the goods you want. You have to use the dollars they have. Your ability to buy, sell, and trade is restricted to that medium through that process of trading dollars for whatever it is you want. You know, try taking something you have of value. You know, hell, try walking down there with gold coins. And, of course, if an unscrupulous employee will take those gold coins and pay for your box of macaroni and cheese out of their own pocket. But the fact is that the greenback, the dollar, had to be involved in the process. They will not trade gold for whatever it is you want. They don't even have that ability to do so if they wanted to, because they're restricted by the system. So your ability to buy, sell, and trade is already locked down. Okay? It's already gone. And that's why in other shows you talk about this. I've advocated getting away from money, getting away from that whole thing, finding your own resources and everything else, because you're one of those liberties. That's a shackle around your neck. It's already there. And we're just so used to it. We're just so accepting of it that we don't realize it anymore.
I mean, we're encouraged to pursue it, to pursue the gain of it. We're not only are we limited to only using it, but our encouragement is in actually making use of it or the acquisition of it. Again, the point that I was making was that when they decided to introduce the dollar, it was painted out as a good thing. You weren't going to have to carry all these big, heavy metal gold coins in your pocket anymore, or silver coins in your pocket anymore. That this now paper symbol is going to make your pockets lighter, But it still represents, whatever which is sitting over here in the bank. But now you take this and you trade it. So it was something that everybody thought, oh, this is going to be much better. And it turns out, it's not much better.
Well, monetary systems for centuries have been run on the idea that you had a pile of something valuable sitting someplace, and that something value could be calculated. Its worth could be calculated and determined, and what they would do then is you would have some sort of note that said you had this thing of value, and that you were able to trade a portion of that thing of value for whatever it was you were going to have, in exchange, and this note declared your ability to trade in that way. So if somebody took that note from you, they knew they could go to whatever resource you had and collect their portion of that resource. So the paper money thing makes sense. But when the government started moving away from a standard of that paper being based on something real, when they said that paper is no longer going to be based on a gold standard, instead, it's based on, what? What the hell is your dollar worth? What is it that, it's worth a dollar? It is its own standard. It's ambiguous. They can inflate it and deflate it whenever they want. Your dollar today that buys you a double cheeseburger at McDonald's, tomorrow might buy you five double cheeseburgers if they want, and the next day might not buy you one. Okay, so it's totally ambiguous, totally inflated, and totally out of control. Or rather, it's controlled by these folks who tweak it just enough to get whatever it is they need to get out of you to work for that dollar, But then, you know, also to make sure you don't go nuts when that dollar can't buy shit, when that dollar can't do anything. Messiah Bey, like I've gone back to this point as well. Messiah Bey had an interview recently where he mentions seeking financial independence. And I think it was a conversation I actually had with him about this point. He talked about a philosopher, I don't know if it was Chinese or Japanese or something like that, who talked about true financial independence meant being able to secure your own resources without even the need of trading something precious to achieve those resources. Financial independence meant being independent of finances. It's something that, again, this is the Slyman mentality we're talking about, having that buffer, having the money, whatever little money you need to have in your checking account or whatever, so that if something happens and you're still paying bills because you can't go down to your apartment manager, you can't go down to the bank and pay your mortgage, saying you're going to clean up the parking lot for them, you don't have that option, so that you have whatever money you need to maintain your lifestyle until that option goes away. But then getting away from the need for those things, and the exit strategy I talked about on the Eminent Minds page, that's one of the things I'm working towards is, divesting myself of these material possessions because they represent resources that were spent that I didn't need to spend those resources. I didn't need to spend those resources on those other things. They represent a sense of identity that's false, that's been encouraged by this system. And it's resources now that I know that I could use in a better manner.
Right on, man. Right on. So using the devil against itself, so to speak. I kind of wanted, because we've got about 10 minutes left, and I wanted to tap into something and maybe make a little bit of this show relevant to Satanism. Tim popped something up there, and I know he's just being the adversary to the adversary, as he calls himself. He asked if the pursuit of money was not a satanic philosophy, and I don't necessarily see that as being the case. In fact, I kind of view it as being a Judeo-Christian or an Abrahamic thing. If we really take a look at the world out there right now, you don't see huge monoliths built to Satan. You see huge monoliths built to Yahweh or Allah. You see these people that are in this particular religion amassing huge amounts of monetary wealth. Name one Satanist that's rich. I mean, even Anton LaVey died broke as hell.
Right. Well, and I think the difference, we're talking about Satanism and Christianity, is that the word wealth has come to mean something other than what it originally meant. Wealth was just material success. Wealth was having an abundance of resources, having those things you need. Now wealth means having money, okay? Try eating it. Drinking it. Try breathing it. It's money is not something that you need. It's not wealth. It represents the ability to acquire those things. Christianity has opposed as part of its philosophy. The teaching of Jesus. Divest yourself of that stuff. Jesus of Nazareth said a lot of the same fucking things we're saying. On the other hand, Satanism says, you want success. You want to pursue success in whatever it is you're doing. But what that success is self-defined. It's self-determined. When you're pursuing wealth, you're pursuing something that's been determined by somebody else. You're pursuing some concept of something that, some standard that's being established by somebody else. The Christian churches, the different Muslim faiths, the Judaism, the Hebrew faith, the temples and what have you, they've been very good at acquiring resources and using those resources to prop themselves up, to display their success. And it's good for marketing. But I don't think that those institutions always necessarily represent the philosophy or theology that they're pushing on the people.
Right on, man. I agree with that entirely. I think... I think that is the sleight of hand part of the whole trick. So with all that in mind, I did want to kind of make mention while I was thinking about this whole thing, because you were talking about, you know, Jesus and you know, the lessons he was teaching. I recently got to check out the History Channel's documentary on, at least I think it was the History Channel. It might have been them or National Geographic, but the Gospel of Judas. And I actually, next Saturday, what I intend to do, and anybody interested in co-hosting or offering an opposite perspective, I want to talk about that a little bit, but I want to get more specific into the Gospels that didn't make it into the Bible, and the counter view that's offered because of that. You know, the four main Gospels that are in there, they are all kind of aligned in story, but the Gospel of Judas, at least the one that they've found, it tells a completely different story. So I thought I would make mention that that's going to be my topic next Saturday.
Right on. So it's going to be a cool show. I actually haven't read the Gospel of Judas. So I haven't even come across that. Information I have come across, just kind of fuck with people a little bit, has made some of the information I've read about Jesus of Nazareth. Has made that person, that character, fictional or real, whatever you want to call him, Jesus Nazareth is probably one of my favorite Luciferians out of history. So for people listening to that, you know, wrap your head around that. That, you know, Jesus of Nazareth as a Luciferian.
That's actually very pertinent to the Gospel of Judas and one of the things that I was going to touch on in next week's show. So definitely people should tune in. That was something that I just found absolutely mind-blowing. If what was implied in this text is true, and it's admittedly incomplete, you know, the only copy that they have, only 85% of it survived and was translatable. But I thought it would be kind of cool to hit that up and maybe, you know, take a look at how the same picture can be spun in many different ways, because that's certainly what we're suffering at this point in time.
Absolutely. Don't have your own perspective. Don't you do your own research, and definitely don't develop your own value structure. And that's something that's what we're doing here. You know, if you don't do the preparedness, if you don't get into the whole, you know, I need to get ready for the shit to all fall apart. If the only thing you take away from here is I need to look at things for myself, that would be a huge accomplishment as far as I'm concerned. That would be the be all of our effort, is getting people to look at things for themselves and make some of their own decisions.
Right on, man. I would be even willing to say that I would probably call that my magnum opus if that's all I ever accomplish in my life.
Right on.
So two minutes left. Anything you want to talk about? What's coming up on Tuesday or
Tuesday? I'm kicking this around. Okay. There have been several goings on with different Satanists that I thought might be worth discussing. Not again calling attention to the behavior and not to the individuals. I don't know if I can do a whole show on it, but I'm thinking Tuesday being the Satanist of the Illuminous Edition, focusing on Satanism and Satanists, especially the internet-based Satanists. So might be an interesting show, or it might be shit. I don't know.
Right on, man.
90 seconds.
I will probably be present for that show. I don't really know what you got in mind, but I kind of have some suspicions. So you might have an actual caller this time around.
Oh, right on. we're both getting used to that hour of just talking to ourselves kind of thing.
Yeah.
60 seconds.
I kind of expressed in the beginning of this yesterday's show that to me it's a major challenge. I don't make it a habit to talk to myself straight for an hour like that in some informative fashion. So it's difficult.
Right on.
Right. So with all that being said and done, man, I guess we can kick the outro and we'll talk to everybody next week.
Right on. Check it out next week because we're going to get more into it, just like the last three shows we've done. So listen to those archives.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but it's the old expression goes. Tough luck. Special thanks to Dad, Rocky DeRoma, for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?